And now on Tucson Business Radio, let's find out how to be healthy, wealthy, and wise with your host, Karen Fisher.
Good afternoon. This is Karen Fisher coming to you live from Tucson, Arizona, from the Stewart Title Station of Business X Radio. I'm super excited. This is the inaugural show of what will be a regular show of called Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise. I'm Karen Fisher. I am a senior loan officer with Summit Funding, but I wear lots and lots of other hats. And one of my passions is not just connecting people to money, but also connecting people to the correct resources, information, tools, whatever it is to make their lives better. So I have three special and amazing, wonderful guests with me today. I'm going to introduce you. So Miss Healthy, we've got Vera Knight. So behind the scenes, Vera herself, she is a master personal trainer since 1997, and she is a lifestyle expert. She is amazing at teaching people. One of the things I love is you talk about playing with your food. You've had outrageous success helping people to become more healthy. Tell us a little bit more about you.
Okay. Hi, Karen. Well, thank you so much for inviting me to be part of your first show. I'm super excited to be here. You know, fitness is so much fun. And for so many years, I struggled in the fitness industry trying to follow somebody else's plan, meal plan, exercise plan, and it never quite worked in my life or my clients' lives. We all kind of struggle together. And a few years ago, I decided that I needed to just ditch that diet mindset, and I started to play with my food. I invited a few clients to join me in this new program that I put together, and it changed my life, it changed their lives, and I think it's probably one of the most fun things, playing with your food. I call it playing life, because everything we do in life is a game, and food has to play with life, and when it does, it's beautiful.
Well, and I love it, and I've had the honor of knowing you for many years, and I've seen some of the successes that your clients have experienced, and it's like it's not the fat, it's not like the diet du jour, and it's lifestyle, and it's not about the weight, it's not about the numbers, but it is about how you feel. So So we've got lots to talk about with that.
We do, Karen. Thank you.
So I do want to introduce to you Miss Wealthy, which is Pam Hopman. Pam Hopman is a financial advisor. You've got more alphabets after your name than about anybody that I know. But behind the scenes, we have known each other. You've said it's been 7 years. You are the author of one of the best-selling books right now on financial freedom. And I forgot, you got to tell me the name because I have it.
Wealth Amplified.
Wealth Amplified. Oh my gosh, it's so fantastic as far as that. But she's done a lot of work in helping people to identify their personalities as far as their money and things like that. So I know a little bit about the scenes, but would you please tell the listeners why you got into the financial arena and your how you take care of your clients to make them wealthy with their money?
Well, I ended up in the financial arena because I was a stay-at-home mom for many years, and one day my 40-year-old brother-in-law dropped dead in a park on a Sunday morning and left behind a wife and three children. And his wife turned to me and said, "Pam, I don't know what I'm going to do." And I had been dabbling a little bit with insurance and taxes and investments, and the calling hit me. Let's just put it that way. So, you know, I didn't have a lot of experience. I had a lot of great mentors in the beginning, but I've always been drawn to, and women have always been drawn to me that need my services because they're either unaware or they don't feel they know enough about themselves around money or about their money situation. You know, whether going through a divorce or there's a death or just a transition to a new job. So it's one of the places where I really focus on, and I created a unique way of working with women. And that's where the Wealth Amplified program and book came from.
Well, and part of that is dealing with identifying your money personality. Like
correct.
how do you, I guess my own interpretation, having read the book, is like, how do you interpret your relationship with money? And there's a lot of people that have a very unhealthy relationship with money. They either just, you know, like just put their head in the sand. They pretend like, you know, it's not there. Others are, I mean, and so you'll talk to us a little bit about the four personality types.
Yes.
And I love it. Okay. And then last but not least, we have Miss Wisdom. Kim and I are actually recent. It's Kim Sparling, and she is the president for the Assistance League of Tucson. And think on this. This is a nonprofit organization here in Tucson. So you're dealing with volunteers. You're 100% volunteer. And yet you have to have them do a lot of things, and you don't really even have the power to fire them like if they were employees. And you, I know, serve, you've got quite a few programs that you do, but right now within the Tucson community, you're serving 12,000 families, which is just unbelievable to me. One of the things about, yeah, it's huge, but one of the things that why I asked you to be a guest on the show is that I know that volunteering isn't just about the recipient. What it teaches our children, what it teaches us as a society, as we take care of those who cannot take care of themselves or not take care of themselves well, maybe that's a better terminology with it. So tell me a little bit more about your background. I know a little bit, but you know, you come from a very structured background.
Yes, actually, I started life as a systems engineer on the East Coast. I'm originally from Southern California, and then we moved to Tucson. And my mother was a member of Assistance League, which is a national organization, and there are 120 chapters across the United States. There's one chapter here in Tucson. And my mother joined, of course, when she first came, and she's been a member of Assistance League for about 50 years now.
Oh, wow.
And I was actually in the high school auxiliary in Southern California when I was a teenager. So she came home one day and she said to me, "Hey, they need a website. You can do that. You never say no to mom, ever. Not if you want to live in peace."
Oh.
So I volunteered and sort of backed my way into then becoming a full member and volunteering some more, and eventually was asked to be president. And I'm delighted to be president. And you brought up something I thought was interesting. Working with volunteers is different from working with employees. And I've come to the realization that you treat all people the same, but you manage volunteers differently than you manage employees. In some ways, you have to find their passion. You have to find a fit for each volunteer. And you may find that you put them in one area and they don't perform, or they aren't giving back. So you have to find that place where you walk in every day and you say, "I work for smiles." Mm. And you walk out feeling good about what you've done. If you can do that with an employee, you're doing great. With volunteers, that's the essence of a successful organization.
Oh, I love that analogy. Work for smiles. Can I steal that? I do a lot of R&D, which is rob and duplicate. So there we go. Okay. So as far as that. So now, did any of the three of you know each other before today? No?
No. Well, I think I met.
Might have met Pam at one point in time.
Yes.
Okay.
I think we met each other through NABO.
Oh, that's right, NABO.
Oh, my gosh, NABO. Yeah. So there you go. Well, we've got some really, this is fun. What I love about doing radio, especially doing live radio, and in this case, live and podcasted radio, is that it's really getting us in touch with the community at a closer basis. And so we're super excited about this. So Vera, let's talk a little bit more about, and this is not, you know, she said that like this, you guys just jump in, but I want you to tell me a little bit more, because I've read some of the things and I've seen the results, but tell me a little bit more about how we should play with our game. And, you know, everybody's talking about the diet du jour. Right now, the diet du jour is keto. Everybody's talking about keto, 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 keto. Tell me more.
They are talking about keto, and so many people are doing keto. And keto is a great diet, Karen, really, if you could sustain it. And I think like any diet that people go on, it's hard to follow through for the long range. But when you could get people to play with their food and maybe make it ebb and flow and not so restrictive, they do better. And that's the whole idea about playing with your food and playing life, because food is part of life. And we can't try and stay away, avoid, restrict, not eat, you know, when we're out living life. But when we can play with it and make it work for us, it's so much better. So keto is great. There are some people who should do keto. I mean, diabetics, it's great for diabetics to get their sugar under control. But then they have to figure out that balance to live it ongoing.
So what I love about what you're doing, and I, like I said, I've seen a lot of your success stories, but what I love about what you're doing is that many of the women, and a couple of men, but many of the women that I've seen, because you've done a lot of work with women, they're still out at the networking luncheons. They're still out at the luncheons. They're not sitting there telling the waiter, okay, just bring me lettuce and that's it, you know. So tell me more about that.
Well, because life isn't about lettuce, and those women don't, you know, they don't live, they don't make it anyway. Okay. So here's the thing. This is, you know, I think when people can figure out that we are in a networking society, I mean, I network 5 times a week, and do I have to eat at every networking meeting? No, but when I'm playing my life, I set it up. I say, well, Monday I'll eat here, and then next week on Tuesday I'll eat at this meeting. You know, so you kind of spread it around and you fit your life so that you sit there and you don't, maybe you don't eat everywhere that you go, because that could get really old. It's expensive, it's fattening, but you can play it. You can coordinate your schedule so that you can be part of the food everywhere, just not always. Am I making sense?
Yeah, no, it is making sense. So, but a little bit about that. So let's say you're at a networking event. And, you know, you don't oftentimes have the choice of what's there. What are some of the things that are that you can say that, you know what, for most people, this is a healthy way of eating? What would some of those choices be?
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you mean they're serving you lunch, you're not buying off a menu.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. Well, if they're serving you lunch, it just depends on what your goal is. Most people can do good if they avoid the bread and the butter on the plate. The potatoes, sometimes if you're living that keto lifestyle or trying to keep your carbs low, you know, and if you don't have an option, then just enjoy the food and you make adjustments later on in the
day.
You could always, if it's a game, you could always make an adjustment in how you're playing. So if you blow it for the afternoon, then you just make an adjustment. It's called what you do next that matters most.
Oh, I like that very much.
It's the truth.
Very, very much. Okay. Well, that's huge. That's huge. So, Pam, talk to me, because this is the same thing. And actually, that restrictiveness, I think that actually plays into some of the stuff what happens with money, because some people, so as a mortgage loan officer, and I've told people this many times, I said, look, as your loan officer, you have to tell me everything that your mother told you were not allowed to ask, like your age, your income, what's in your bank account, right? Oh, and not only do you have to tell me, you have to prove it to me. Oh, and with the new rules, you don't just prove it to me once, you have to prove it to me twice. So I you know, with confidentiality, because I know nobody, like I never tell a client that I did their loan. I'll let them say I did their loan, but it's very, very confidential always. But what I can tell you is I see some just crazy things. I've got clients that I have some clients right now that are making, which is actually like very low income, probably 30 to 35,000, and they are able, and they are stocking away almost 25% of their income. It's crazy to me to see how they do it. And then I've got some others, my clients, some of my clients who are physicians and engineers and stuff like that. They are so far behind and upside down. It's so. Talk to me about those money personalities, because,
well, as you just said, It's really not about how much money you make. It's about how much money you have to do the things that you're committed to doing at the end of the day. And we all have a personality around money. A lot of it came from when we were growing up and some of the stories that we heard from our parents or teachers or people around us. And a lot of it, we've made decisions over time, like I'll never do that again, or I'm always going to do that. So all of those things that we make decisions around finances go into the person that you are today. So we have people that save all the time. And that might be what I call a tortoise or a chess master. And then we have people that know that money is a great tool and they use it sometimes to their detriment, but they use it all the time. And that's like a champ. Or somebody who always is looking for using money for a good time is a funster. And somebody that has no conscience about that, we would call a whirly bird. So there's all these different personalities. Now, nobody's all one thing. I mean, that would be a caricature of a person. I can describe that person to you, but there is nobody that is that, really. You're a blend of those things. And the funny thing is that in certain situations, you will always find yourself making the same financial decisions until you actually do a little work and discover, yes, this is what I do. This is why I do it. You know, my parents said money is evil. Money is the my parents didn't say this, by the way, but somebody's parents did. Money is the root of all evil. Well, then money's bad. Then if I have a lot of money, then I'm bad. So I can't have a lot of money. So you find ways of not having money no matter how much money you make.
We've talked about this with business owners, people that are starting business. Women are starting businesses. I forget what the statistics are, but it's almost 2-1 over men as far as starting businesses, entrepreneurs, and things like that. But a lot of women have an issue. We've had this conversation. A lot of women have an issue with charging what they're worth. And there's a concept or what I heard as far as a terminology, which I thought was like, oh, my God, it is so true, called noble poverty. Oh, I'm not going to charge. I just do it because I love to do it. Well, the problem is that if you can't feed your family off it, I don't care how much you love it and how valuable your service is, if you're not, you know, I'm talking about charging a fair market value for your services. But why do women seem to have an issue? I mean, this is my observation. I don't know if you've seen that.
I don't Sometimes, know the exact why, but it's true that women have this thing about their value, and there's books done on what's called the imposter syndrome. So if you put a bunch of women in a group and you ask them to describe themselves to you, they will more than likely not tell you about their major accomplishments. If you put a group of young men in a room, they'll be fighting each other to tell you their accomplishments. And it's all about the imposter syndrome. Women don't feel that they are as good as they are. And this happens at the top level of CEOs all the way down to somebody who works for minimum wage. It's just a common situation. It's another thing that when you start to recognize it and you allow it to sink in that you're actually good at what you do and you actually have earned the awards you've been given and they're actually a reflection of the true you as opposed to what you think, then you actually have a little bit more power.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is kind of fear. Women are fear speaking out. They feel like they're boasting, they're bragging, and they want to just kind of blend in sometimes. So that's the imposter syndrome that you're talking about. They're afraid of speaking their truth. And it's a sad thing. They do that in every area of life too. It's not just money. It's in every area.
I definitely see that because I've seen some people that are just, they're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. What they do, they really, really make a difference. And yet they're playing very small. They're keeping their voice, you know, not there. So
I think part of it too is how women are brought up. You're brought up not necessarily to boast about yourself, to tell the world, oh, here's all the terrific things that I've been doing. But you're brought up to be understated about it, and you carry that into your career, which is a detriment.
Well, and interestingly, because before you were the president of the Assistance League, you were in a rather male-dominated field. How many other engineers were doing, systems engineers, were you working with through those years?
So I started working in the systems engineering business in Boston, which had more a higher ratio of women working in technical fields than many other cities. But very often I was the only woman in the room. I chaired an international standard on network security. In the very beginning, I was the only woman in the room. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting. It was at times it was a privilege, and at other times it was a barrier to getting the job done. So you had to just find ways to work around it.
Yeah, and I just think that what I have seen that's happened because, and part of it, on a personal basis with me, and I didn't realize this until I actually had, was a mutual friend, Siobhan Moran. She's friends, oh my gosh, my mind just went totally, like Julianne Stittick's friend. So she had said, well, you, Karen, have a little bit more of a, quote, male energy. And I'm like, what does she mean by that? I'm like, no, I'm like... No, she's as far as this. And so I kind of looked back on it and I was like, oh, some of it is that nurture, because on a personal basis for me, and it'd be interesting to see as far as the families, but I personally was the first girl born in three generations on my dad's side of the family. My grandfather was one of six boys from the Upper Peninsula in Michigan. He was a police officer in Detroit during Prohibition and the Depression. I mean, crazy stuff. And then my dad was one of four boys. And so they literally, when I was born, they kind of didn't, like, I had my uncles that were very, very involved in my life. And so I never got the message that so many girls of my age did, that I couldn't do anything. And it was kind of funny because I was, you know, those that know me, I'm someday I'll be 5 feet tall, but I'm not there yet. And yet it didn't say, and it was really funny. We were talking about this the other day at the workshop. People have literally said to me that meeting me for the first time, they'll say, you're much taller than you sound. I'm like, shorter than you sound is actually what they said. I'm like, I didn't know people sounded some way, but anyhow, so it's interesting.
You have a tall attitude.
I guess maybe that's what it is. I don't know. We're here to make a positive difference. So
I think your point about family and their attitude toward you and their support makes a big difference. My mother had a career. She was head of the Pasadena Public Library System, one main branch library, 40 smaller branches. So it never occurred to me that I couldn't do anything I wanted to. And I had a father at the same time who was incredibly supportive. And they just assumed, you're going to go, you're going to get an education, and you're going to move out of the house and get a job.
Oh, what a concept.
So, yes.
So.
I think that's in every area, whether it's finances or careers or food. We learn those behaviors from when we're children, and we carry them on into our life. But they can be broken. We can change those thoughts in our head. It takes some work, but it can be done.
Well, and I think also just as far as with that vision, because you're talking about the, you know, as far as the things as far as with money, oh my goodness, is that as far as with the families, the way that some families deal or mostly don't deal with money or even money conversations. I mean, try having a conversation with people that are in their elder years, and you're trying to figure out if they've got anything in place for either their insurance or long-term care, or what are your plans, you know, and some of them don't have any plans. So Kim, tell me a little bit more about, you know, just in terms of, I know that there's a passion, but there's a lot to head up 12, to head up, well, how many total volunteers? I know it's a lot.
We have about 400 volunteers.
400. Oh, my gosh.
And we have an annual operating budget of $800,000. Yeah, so, and I don't do this by myself. I have a board, and we're a working board. So every board member not only functions as a board member, but as the head of a department. So we have operational and staff melded into two people. And basically, you pitch in and do anything that you need to do to make things work. We're very lucky to have a national organization that gives us the procedures and the policies and the bylaws to help us operate. So that, and we can always, they're another resource, and they're all volunteer too.
That is just amazing.
Sure.
When
is.
You think about, and everybody, we're coming into charity season, as is evidenced by everything that's showing up in my mailbox right now. tell me a little bit more about, so you've got volunteers that range in all ages. One of the programs I'm particularly aware of is the Assistings, which are our young people. Why is it important for our young people now to do volunteer work? Because it used to be your parents would just make you, you know, you just like, that's what you did. You know, you typically went along with them with whatever they were doing. But now it's a little bit different. So
we currently have 120 assistees and 50 on the waiting list. Our program is full. We're very fortunate. We're popular. That's
wow.
That's a great place to be. And we start in the 9th grade and go through to the 12th grade. They volunteer with us for 4 years. And at the end of that 4 years, there is a big celebration thanking them for their service. Each year, volunteers with a particular charity other than Assistance League. So, for example, the 9th graders might go to Ronald McDonald House. The 10th graders are helping out at Fisher House. So they have the opportunity to experience not only Assistance League in our programs, but also programs of other charitable organizations in Tucson. In addition to that, they have a philanthropic program called Assisteens Helping Tucson Teens. So they get grants from Title I middle schools. The teachers write the grants for sports, art, and music. So the one I love the best was one year a teacher wrote a grant. They had an orchestra. They had violins. They had no violin strings.
Oh my gosh. So the teacher
wrote a grant, and we were able to give them violin strings so they could play. You know, there are some schools where they have basketballs that are underinflated, and they're playing. They're doing PE with the basketballs that are underinflated. So we've been able to give basketballs. So the other good part about this is that our young assist teens learn how to read a grant. They learn what a grant means. And so they were cute. One time around the table, our grants chairman works with them so that they understand what to do. But they looked at one grant and they said, nope, that one's gone. They didn't follow the instructions. And I've sat in grant writing workshops where I have heard people who read grants for foundations, for large corporations, they do the same thing. That's the first thing they do. They get rid of the grants where you didn't follow the instructions to the letter. So it's a good learning lesson, because I have never seen in college a course about grant writing. This is something that you learn after you leave school. So you asked the question, what's important about our young people volunteering? What we see a lot of young people right now is they're putting this on their college resumes. And for some of them, it's because they need to check that box on a college resume. But we find with our assist teens, once again, they're passionate about what we do and what they're doing for the community. And we hope that they'll go to college, and after they start their career, if they stay here in Tucson, they'll come back and become a member. We just started a brand new group called the Juniors. And so that is, I want to say, college age and just graduated from college. So it's a committee, and we have volunteer opportunities for them so that we're keeping those assist teens. If they stay in Tucson, they can certainly stay with us and continue to volunteer.
I think that is fabulous. I mean, I know that, you know, for me, volunteering, and I know everybody in this room actually volunteers. So for me, in terms of the volunteer piece of it, is it's what connects us to our humanity. And you're so, for example, one time, and our daughter is Allison. She is in graduate school right now, getting her doctorate in applied mathematics with an emphasis in computational neuroscience. Try fitting that on anything. But behind the scenes, she did a lot of volunteering, not just because, well, first of all, St. Michael's School that she went to here in Tucson, that was just part of the curriculum, as was public speaking. They had them doing public speeches when they were like in kindergarten, first grade. So I don't think there's a kid that graduated from St. Michael's that's afraid to do public speaking, which I hear is one of the biggest fears ever. And then the other thing that's happened was just giving back. And the reality is, for example, she was part of National Charity League, which is a national organization for mother and daughters that just came to Tucson. She was just in that second class when she was in high school that just came there. And so we had a group of girls, and you mentioned the Ronald McDonald House, which is one of my absolute favorite charities. So here we are with a group of moms and their daughters. There must have been about 12 of us cooking the meals for the families that are housed there. And then the rest of the story is that this young woman walks by, and she's younger than our daughters. Like, she is actually younger. And she had a picture of her baby on her T-shirt. And that baby was born very, very prematurely. And that baby is fighting for his life. And she walked by these girls that are sitting there cooking, and she says to them, if he says he loves you, it's a lie. Oh, and here she is, and we're like this, right? Our hands up. And it turns out, you know, she ended up getting pregnant. She was probably 14, 15 years old. And now she says he's gone. He's nowhere to be found. And that baby was, you know, fighting for the life. Now, we could have never, as moms, had, I don't care how much lecturing we would have done, none of us could have ever had the kind of impact that young woman had on them. And first of all, they were passionate about helping her, so they went back and volunteered more for the family. But also, I think they made different decisions as they were going through high school and college. So anyhow, so tell us more about, as far as the personalities, what you see. What do you see, and how are people doing with their money right now? Some good, some not so good.
You know, it really doesn't change much. It's really? How well people do. The big thing around the money personalities and the profile is it's a tool so that people will start to reflect upon how they make their decisions, so that if they want to accomplish a money goal and reach a money dream, I call it money dreams in my book. We have all money dreams and desires. If you want to reach a money dream and you have no control over your behavior because you don't know what's causing you to make the decisions you make, you're never going to get to that money dream. So people that work with me, they start to see these things. They start to see the stories they have from their children. And we do exercises, and we do exercises around the dreams, and we try to get them really into the core being by, you know, we use all the senses, and we do a lot of work in that area, so that, you know, and we have them, you know, they're smart goals. They're
tell us what SMART is. So specific.
They're specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timed. And so there's a time. So we use a year when people come through the course with me. We use a year. And then they have a quarterly. They have quarterly and they have monthlies to get to the yearly goal. And so then we'd have to figure out what behaviors are necessary to do that. Sometimes it's saving money. Sometimes it's moving money from one place to another. But I think one of the biggest fallacies, and it's not an excuse not to pay it, the biggest fallacies that we have in our society is that you got to pay down your debt first before you can do anything else. It's really a disservice to people, because when you go in that direction, if you find yourself in debt, and you have this mindset, I've got to pay down this debt before I can do anything else. I got to pay down this debt. What kind of enjoyment are you having out of life? So we have a conversation about what's more important, paying off debt, saving for your future, or having some money to play with. And the end all of that conversation is they are all important, and none of them are more important than the other. So you have to live your life so that you can have a full life. You talked about balance, and maybe mm-hmm. there isn't any balance, but there is a full life. And
yes.
If you just focus mm-hmm. on one thing, you may get there, but you may not be very happy about it. And life is really too short when you look around, not to have some happiness and some help in achieving all this that you want to achieve.
Well, what do you, if you've got somebody who's getting ready to, let's say they're going to start their business, because I've actually, through the years, I've been able to connect you with people that are wanting to start their business. If you were, like, somebody has a great idea and they're going to launch their business, what are some of those first steps that you would do to help them create a solid foundation? Because statistically, the number of businesses that start up, there's a high percentage of them that don't make it beyond the first year. What I personally see with that is, because of those failures of those businesses, is that most underwriting guidelines, if they're wanting to either get capital for their business or they want to borrow money for a home, they can't do anything until they have a two-year track record as evidenced by their federal tax returns. So tell me a little bit. You've got somebody that's got a dream and they want to start a business.
Well, the first thing is, having a dream is great, and it may be a viable business. But even if it's a viable business, if they don't know what they're doing around their finances, they're going to fail.
The infamous E-Myth Revisited, where you've got the baker, they bake great bread and they're going to open a bakery, yeah, and they have no idea.
If they don't understand their numbers, if they don't understand how much money it takes to put the business out and to put whatever products they're giving out, if they don't understand how much money it costs to run the business and to live on, then they often are really good at making the product or the service. A lot of times people aren't as good about that. So that's critical. The second part of that is, one of the other parts of that is, that you really want to make sure you're in the right tax entity. You can save thousands of dollars by being in the right tax entity, and you can waste thousands of dollars not being in the right tax entity.
So when you're talking about tax entity, I know you're talking about whether you're going to take that as a sole proprietor, maybe Schedule C, or if you're going to incorporate a traditional corporation or subchapter S.
Correct.
What are some of those initial resources? Like, what's some of those first resources where somebody needs to start? Like, where do they get the sound advice and counsel as to, okay, I have this idea, who do I talk to?
Well, there's a lot of free available, and I believe SCORE is the name of the
app. Yeah, we've got great SCORE here.
We've got a great SCORE here.
SCORE stands for Senior Corps of Retired Executives.
I've talked to people after they've talked to the people at SCORE a lot of times, and they usually get a full complement of things that are necessary to do to have a viable business. But if you're not going to do that, then you should talk to an accountant, somebody who works with small businesses, that works with entrepreneurs and understands them. You also want to look at other people that might be in similar industries, if not the same industry, and see what they're doing around how they're managing their businesses. There's a lot of things you can do when you first start out. And people, I've found that most of the people I know that like to give advice, I'm one of those people that can't shut up if I think I can help somebody. that's what I want to do. I want to help you. I mean, most people are like that. Now, you might want to watch what kind of advice you take from your, say, brother-in-law who has no entrepreneurial skills, never worked for himself. You know, he may not be the best place to go for information, but there's a lot of people out there who
work.
I was just going to say, can I put in a plug here SCORE? At Assistance League, we use them, and they were great because we have a thrift shop, which provides about 65% of our funding. So we said, well, how do we increase our customers? When they walk in the door, how do we say, hey, you know, look over here, look over here, look over here? So SCORE paired us with a former vice president from JCPenney's.
Oh, my gosh.
In merchandising. And it was just fabulous. It was amazing. He came in and he gave us all kinds of tips. So we redid everything and we saw business go up. In addition to that, because of our association with him, we have a program called Operation School Bell, where we provide new clothing for children in need from Title I schools. We work with 40 schools in the Tucson area.
Tell me what a Title I school is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Title I means they are on free or reduced lunch. So these are children who very often that free or reduced lunch may be the only meal they get during the day. So those are the kids that we target. We target those most in need. So what this gentleman from JCPenney's did was he said, hey, you know, you have this great program. Do you want to partner with JCPenney's and maybe dress some of your children at JCPenney's?
Oh, that's phenomenal.
We'll give you a discount. And when we do dressings at JCPenney's, they always run great sales so that we get more that day. We just did a dressing there this past weekend. And they gave free backpacks to every kid who came.
Oh, my gosh. So, well, I know behind the scenes because of some of those that are marginalized in our community that one of the things that's really hard for kids, you know, you talk about bullying, this, that, and the other. You know, when you're going to school and you're in the exact same clothes or clothes that are ill-fitting, dirty, you know, whatever the case may be, it's really hard for you to be focused on maybe what the teacher's talking about when you know you're being made fun of. It's tragic.
And we see that Operation School Bell is just so much fun. This year we plan to dress 4,900 children.
Think about that.
In partnering with 40 schools and 3 agencies here in Tucson. And we do it in 3 ways. We bring children to our facility, which is on Alvernon, just north of Speedway. We do 4 dressings with JCPenney's, and we also work with uniform schools. So we give them a voucher to go to Fallas and pick up their uniforms. And then we drop ship backpacks, hoodies, and books, and Payless shoe card vouchers to each school. So the idea is that each child will receive enough clothes, clean clothes, new clothes to go to school for a week. And if you wear, just as you said, if you wear clothes to school and you fit in, you're less likely to be bullied. You're more likely to want to go back the next day. And that's the important thing. And as I said, we work for smiles. There is nothing like having a child come to Operation School Bell and providing them with new clothes. And I always love it. Little girls are like, oh, this is great. I know how to shop. And little boys are always very suspicious. What is that? And by the time they leave, they have a backpack which has two pairs of jeans, three t-shirts, brand new underwear and socks, a book of their own. And for some of these kids, there are no books in their homes. So this is the first book they have ever had. And a voucher to go to Payless Shoes and get new, brand new shoes
that fit,
and that they like. Yeah. And that are in style, and also a warm hoodie so that they also have that. And we just laugh. When they come and we do the dressings, we say we get more out of this than the kids do, because you leave just floating on a cloud, because these kids were so excited. We had one school rep who after she got back to school, she sent us an email and she said, "You have no idea what it's like being on the bus back to school with these kids. It's like they've been to Disneyland. They were that excited."
Oh my gosh. Well, see, and that's one of the other reasons that part of this and how this all fits in together. So I want to talk to Vera a little bit about what we're seeing. So a lot of people that are on the fringes of society, one of the things that's happening is that they're eating very, very poorly. They're not aware of the importance of fresh fruits and vegetables. They're eating a lot of processed foods, which mm-hmm. then exacerbates health problems and things like that in the future. And one of the other passions that I have and how this all ties in together, I've had the honor of going and teaching both at the high school and at the college level for both Pima College and the U of A on basically, it's a volunteer group through the Tucson Association of Realtors. I'm not a realtor. I'm a loan officer, but I volunteered with the Tucson Association of Realtors personally because they were teaching these modules. That's the home ownership. And people are like, why, you know, some people that they only think about the money with clients. Why are you teaching high school students? They're not going to buy a house. And I'm like, you know what? You got to pay it forward with this generation. So what they talked about is the basics of basic budgeting. What a concept. Budgeting, credit, rent, and then successful home ownership. And then at the end of that time frame, the kids could submit an essay, and there were cash prizes as far as the winning of that essay. But having taught that, you know, one of the things that's happening is that the basic budgeting piece and how some of our population, and Tucson's not unique in this matter, it's across the nation, where some of the biggest predators of lending, such as payday loans and things like that, they are targeting some of our most vulnerable citizens. And Pam, I know as far as with budgeting and then basic credit, you know, as far as that, it's so important. I tell my clients, I've told them a lot, and I say it now too, is that, you know, and the teachers always kind of look at me, but I said, there's one number that's even more important than your ACT or your SAT score, and that's your FICO score. And I'm going to give you the combination. People have heard me say this. The combination is 2-31-7. It takes 2 years to build your credit, 31 days. We're talking one missed payment to destroy it, or at least crash it, if you will. One missed payment can drop your score by 150 points, and then 7 years to clean it up. And so what happens is that the whole FICO score thing and understanding how credit works, you talk about food being a game, the whole FICO score business is a game. It is truly the one area where you are, you know, I mean, it's trying to get something off or prove something that wasn't yours can be very difficult. So, Pam, tell me about what you see as far as with some of the young people. You've got some that are doing really well, and you've got, when do most people come to you and thinking that I need to meet with a financial advisor?
Usually not soon enough. A lot of people don't think they need a financial advisor, or they don't qualify to meet with a financial advisor. So there's the financial advisor, and I can be both of these kinds of financial advisors as well. But I'm going to say there's two different kinds of financial advisors. There's a financial advisor who wants to work with your assets. And I'm really good at that, by the way. That's one of my really good things that I can do. I can help people with their assets. But there's the other financial advisor, and sometimes there's an overlap in this, and that financial advisor is the one that really wants to help you achieve your money dreams and desires and help you achieve your goals. And so if you come early on, you're probably better off than waiting until you've developed, you know, a lot of bad habits, or you've gotten yourself into some trouble, or you've destroyed your credit because you didn't know what you were doing. So I will often meet with young people. I think my youngest client right now is 20 years old.
And I love it.
And she's there at the request of her father, but she's okay about it. I mean, she didn't fight him or anything about it, but he said, would you meet with my daughter? She's 20. And I said, absolutely. Have her come in. She goes to the University of Arizona, and she has a little bit of money to invest, and she's going to come. She's good about saving. She works part-time. She goes to school, and she'll get her first quarterly statement soon on the money that she did invest. And we didn't take it all. We left some of it for, you know, emergency fund, as you should. And then we're going to go through the statement and explain what she's invested in and how this all of these things work together. And that's a perfect age to do it. I used to teach a seventh grade class. We would pretend that they had a certain amount of money. They'd be in groups, and they would go out and buy. We would research and buy stocks for the whole year. And it was fun, too. But this is somebody who's ready to really take it on. I mean, that was really a game. Life is a game. That was really a game. And but this is a different game. This is a game with much more at stake, because this woman is going to be so ready when she finishes college. And she's going to be ready to take on the world.
Well, and one of the things that I see, which is just devastating, I see the debt right now. So I just want to remind all of our listeners that are here, because this will be podcasted. It's a live show now, but it will be podcasted, that we are live from Tucson, Arizona, and we are hosted by the studio, which is housed at Stewart Title's corporate offices. It's Business X Radio right here in Tucson. Click on the link and do some fun things. And this will be a regular show. So want to talk about, so if you had something that you could just like literally kind of open somebody's brain and just pick it, just like open their brain and just drop in a nugget about, I want a nugget from Vera, from Pam, and from Kim about, I want you to talk about healthy, wealthy, and wise, and then you guys can mix it up. So what would that look like? So what's the one nugget that you would say?
I would say what you said earlier about awareness about everything, the energy of the food that you eat, the money you spend on it, the people you're with. Awareness is key to living a healthy lifestyle, I think, with food, with money, with everything. So just to open their eyes and know that there's always something they could learn about something that they're doing with something they're eating. So awareness is key.
I love that. How about you? It doesn't have to go round robin, but go ahead, whatever.
So I'm thinking a lot about people that I see every day that work really hard. And one of the things about being wealthy is most people that are wealthy or think have the mindset of being wealthy, they take care of their mind and their body.
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm.
They meditate, they do yoga, they exercise regularly. They know that that's as important as any of the work that they're doing to earn the money.
I think one of the most important things is never stop learning. And by volunteering, especially at an organization which is all volunteer, you have an opportunity to do things that you might never, ever be hired to do. My best example was
that, yeah.
I was chair of the Marketing Communications Committee. I'm an engineer. So what's the first thing I did? I went out and I interviewed companies around town that did PR, because I said, volunteers, you have to have long-term relationships with the news and the media. And I said, we can't do this as an all-volunteer. And I happened upon just a wonderful company who got us as an all-volunteer organization, Linda Fahey over at Dark Horse Media. She gives back more than she ever charges us. And it's been a great opportunity. But I had to laugh when I was chair of marketing communications. I said, no, you really don't want me to do this. And they said, we really need somebody to do this. Please help us out. So volunteering, you have an opportunity to learn. You also have the opportunity to meet new people, people you might not otherwise meet. And in the whole process, you're giving back. And once again, you're working for smiles.
I just love that. Well, and for me personally, I think that richness of, you know, the the richness of your whole being. Like there's a lot of people have seen different, they call them vision wheels, and they talk about each area of your life. And one of the things that I have discovered, this is part of the learning thing, everybody talks about having their life in balance. You got to have your life in balance, this, that, and the other. Well, I have figured out that when you get a phone call from the emergency room, you don't have your life in balance. Okay, being in balance, and one of my great mentors is the founder of eWomen Network, which is an international organization. But Sandra Yancey talks about being in balance is maybe you could set it as something to have it as a roadmap. But she likened the old-fashioned teeter-totters. In order to truly be in balance, you had to have things even on both sides. And most of the time, you were out of balance. Very, very rarely would the teeter-totter stay in the middle. Nobody even has teeter-totters now because, God forbid, they're so dangerous, right? But but I like the idea. And this was an analogy because, you know, right now we're dealing – my family and I, we are dealing with some kind of crazy medical things with, you know, our parents are all in their late 80s. So all kinds of crazy things start happening from the health insurance industry really, in my opinion, taking advantage. I have lots of documentation on that, to just not understanding or just dealing with some health issues to begin with. And the reality is that it's not balanced. It's you're going to create a blend. And then the other thing is, from a personal standpoint, and this is why I love as far as the resources, is no one makes it on their own. Like no one makes it on their own. What I also know about as far as Assistance League is some of your recipients through the years, and because you were founded in what,
1959.
I was saying that was the year I was born. I was like, is that really true? Yes,
it 59. Is really true. Yes, we're coming up on our 60th anniversary next year.
So life, sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Life has to ebb and flow. It just does that. And we have to be able to go with it wherever it takes us. And we could always come back to center, but we don't stay there. Just like you said.
Yeah, you don't stay there.
Yeah,
and then,
I know.
And then as far as, there was a great, somebody had told recently, one of my business coaches, actually, I'm trying to think, okay, oh, it's one of my business coaches. And so visualize this. You take a piece of paper and you draw two parallel lines, right? And then with those two parallel lines, let me put this on the website, then you've got what are the highs and the lows, the highs and the lows of whatever's going on with your business, with your relationships, with your health, with your weight, you know, whatever the case may be, with your money. You know, sometimes money emergencies show up, right? But the key is, he says, is not to have the peaks and valleys as big, kind of get them a little bit there, mm-hmm. and to raise the lows so that you have this trend that's going upward. So I thought about, wow, that's really great. That's almost like thinking about like a roller coaster, and just having that roller coaster that's constantly going up. So can you believe it's been almost an hour that we've just sat around and talked? People always get amazed. So tell me more. First of all, we'll start with Pam because she's sitting to my left. I want you to talk about your business specifically and how can people reach you.
So as I said, there's two kinds of financial advisors. I happen to work in both areas. So if you need financial advice or if you need help managing assets, I can help you with that. You can reach me by phone, 520-326-1625. And you can always go to thehopmangroup.com. That's a website. And you can put in your information there and you'll get a call from one of the staff members to come in and see me.
And I know that you're always there. So I'm going to have you repeat because people are writing it down. Repeat your phone number and the email. The email, what? No, website it is.
Website. So phone number is 520-326-1625. And the website is the Hopman Group, H-O-P-M-A-N, group.com.
Fantastic. And Kim?
Well, every Tuesday at 10, I'm sorry, once a month, the first Tuesday of every month at 10 a.m., we offer tours of Assistance League. So you can come see behind the scenes, what goes on, what our programs are about, what our thrift shop is like, and see our facility and see if you're interested in joining or just becoming a patron of Assistance League. So you can reach us. We have a website, altucson.org, altucson.org. Our email address for that is info@altucson.org, or our phone number is 326-8452, extension 6.
Okay, go ahead and repeat the phone number, because I know people always want to have it.
326-8452, extension 6.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And Vera?
Well, you can find me on Facebook. It's my favorite place to connect. I pop right up. I'm Vera Knight. Or you could visit my website at veraknightfitness.com, where you could learn about my programs, my food freedom for fat loss. I call it a game because we play it as a game. Or my Play Life coaching program. I have clients from coast to coast, so you can always reach me on Facebook or my website, veraknightfitness.com.
And I absolutely love your Tucson accent. The accents. So tell me, Vera, where are you originally from?
I was born in Brooklyn and did the migration, Queens, Long Island, but I've been here for 25 years.
See, the Tucson accent. There we go. And how about you, Kim? Where were you? You said California were raised, but is that where you're originally from?
I was born in Southern California, and I've also been now in Tucson for 25 years. I lived in Boston on the East Coast for a long time, so I've lived a few places.
Awesome. And Pam, I know you were in Chicago for a bit, but where are you born originally?
I was born a little north of Boston in Nashua, New Hampshire.
Oh, my gosh.
So we have a little connection there. But I went to school in the Midwest and ended up in the Chicago area, and then Tucson.
That's phenomenal. I'm the Arizona native here. So I was born and raised in Phoenix. My mother swears that the hospital was full. and I came to Tucson by coming to school at the U of A, and we actually moved back to Phoenix. I have lived in Arizona all of my life, except for my junior and senior year of high school, where at that time I lived just outside of Houston. And it was quite a shock. So, because I went from going to Houston, Texas, they love football. And I came from like the worst football team ever at West High in Phoenix, Arizona, to a school in Texas that actually took second in state. Like it's another religion there. It was very, very interesting. But I just want to close out the show and just saying thank you very, very much for our inaugural show, Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise. I just want to encourage my listeners, reach out, get the information, because if you don't need them yourself, you're going to know somebody who does. And I just want to say once again, we have been coming to you live from Tucson, Arizona, from the Stewart Title Office Studio, which is right at, it's Broadway and Alvernon. We're just slightly east of the Mexican Consulate, is where the building is on the second floor. Thank you again. I really appreciate you guys coming on and being part of the show.
Thanks, Karen.
Thanks for having us.